A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been to one too many conferences, and he wants us to catalog the damage. His question, what are 10 of the weirdest gimmicks conference organizers wheel out to get attendees engaged? Not hypotheticals. Things that have actually been reported as happening. The weirder, the better.
And I love this because it's not just a list. It's almost an archaeological dig through the desperation of event planners who've been told engagement numbers are soft.
The prompt doesn't ask us to rank them, but I think we should. Least weird to most unhinged. A countdown.
Agreed. And I want to be clear about something up front. Every single one of these has been documented. These aren't urban legends. Conference attendees have been asked to do each of these things with a straight face.
Number 10. The human knot.
Classic entry-level weird. Everyone stands in a circle, grabs two random hands across from them, and then has to untangle themselves without letting go. It's been a staple of summer camps and corporate retreats for decades.
The physical contact with strangers is the obvious problem, but what I find more interesting is the completely unearned intimacy. You're 3 minutes into a conference about supply chain optimization, and suddenly you're pressed against someone's torso trying to figure out whose arm goes where.
There's actual research on this. The human knot does have some cooperative problem-solving value in groups that already know each other. But at a conference of strangers, it's just forced vulnerability with no consent infrastructure.
Forced vulnerability with no consent infrastructure. That's the conference industry's business card.
Number 9. The silent disco icebreaker.
I've seen this one. Everyone gets headphones, 3 channels of music, and you're supposed to, what? Dance?
Dance, or at least move rhythmically, while watching other people dance to music you can't hear. The surreal part is when you take the headphones off and it's just 40 people shuffling in near total silence except for the squeak of shoes on carpet.
It's a surveillance state nightclub. You can see everyone, but you have no idea what they're listening to.
And someone always picks the channel nobody else is on and ends up doing an aggressive two-step while everyone else sways gently. That person is never invited to the breakout session.
Number 8. The professional cuddler.
This one's real. There are companies that provide certified professional cuddlers for corporate events. They set up a cuddle corner with pillows and blankets, and attendees can book 10-minute sessions.
At a conference, with colleagues.
The pitch is stress reduction. The reality is your procurement manager watching you get spooned by a stranger named Greg, who has a certificate from the Cuddlist Institute.
Which is a real organization.
It is. They have a code of conduct and everything. But the gap between this is clinically valid and this is happening 40 feet from the booth where I'm supposed to learn about enterprise resource planning is just unbridgeable.
I don't think anyone's crossing that bridge. I think they're standing on opposite sides of a canyon, waving uncomfortably.
Number 7. The Laughter Yoga Workshop.
I've been in a room where this was happening. It's haunting.
Describe it.
30 adults in business, casual standing in a circle, making eye contact and forcing laughter. Not jokes, just the physical act of laughing. It starts as a kind of rhythmic ha-ha-ha chant, and then the instructor tells you to let it become authentic.
And does it?
What happens is about a third of the room starts laughing because the situation is so absurd, and the instructor takes credit for that as if the exercise worked. The other two-thirds are making sounds that would be admissible in a war crimes tribunal.
The clinical basis is that the brain doesn't fully distinguish between simulated and genuine laughter for endorphin release. But the clinical basis doesn't account for Janice from accounting, making unwavering eye contact while producing sounds a fox would find distressing.
Number 6. The Ball Pit Networking Session.
Adult ball pits were briefly a thing at tech conferences around 2018-2019. The idea was that people would climb into a pit full of plastic balls and have more playful conversations.
I need to understand the theory of change here.
The theory, as far as I can tell, is that returning to a childlike state lowers inhibitions and encourages creative thinking. The practice is that you're sitting in a pit that smells faintly of feet, trying to have a serious conversation about API integrations while someone's knee keeps surfacing next to your elbow.
And the balls. The balls get everywhere. They migrate. You'll find one in your laptop bag 3 days later.
There's a hygiene dimension too. Those pits are almost never cleaned between sessions. By hour 6 of a 2-day conference, that ball pit is essentially a petri dish with branding.
A petri dish with a sponsored banner above it. The Innovation Playground, brought to you by Salesforce.
Number 5, the Professional Roaster.
I hadn't heard of this one.
Some conferences have hired stand-up comedians specifically to roast attendees during networking breaks. The comedian walks around, identifies someone, and does 2 minutes of material about their outfit, their badge, their company.
So you pay a registration fee to be publicly mocked by someone you didn't ask to mock you.
And the organizer's logic is that it's edgy and breaks down hierarchies. But what it actually does is make everyone terrified to leave their seat. The coffee break becomes a survival scenario.
Is there a consent mechanism? Do you opt in?
Sometimes there's a sticker system. A red dot on your badge means don't roast me. But that creates a second problem, which is that anyone without the dot is now implicitly saying, please humiliate me in front of my industry peers.
So your choices are public target or public coward. That's not a choice. That's a hostage situation with laminated badges.
Number 4, the funeral for dead projects.
All right, this one I want to hear about.
There's a facilitation technique where attendees write down failed projects, abandoned initiatives, or ideas that never launched on pieces of paper, and then the group holds a mock funeral. Eulogies, a cardboard coffin, the whole thing.
What are we burying? Like, here lies the Q3 rebrand that marketing killed.
And people are expected to share genuine emotional responses. The facilitator will say things like, honor what this project taught you, while someone is holding back tears about a CRM migration that got canceled.
The thing is, I can see how this would be cathartic in the right context. A small team that actually went through something together.
Sure, but at a conference of 200 strangers, you're performing grief for a project you never heard of, for a company you don't work at, while someone you met 20 minutes ago chokes up about a pivot that never pivoted.
And somewhere in that room is the person who actually killed that project, just nodding along.
Number 3, the trust fall from an actual height.
No.
Yes. There are team-building companies that do elevated trust falls, not the standard version where you fall backward off a table into coworkers' arms. These involve platforms, sometimes 8 to 10 feet up, and you fall backward into a crowd of attendees.
What conference has the liability waiver for this?
The waiver is part of the experience. You sign it, you climb up, and then you're supposed to learn something about vulnerability.
What you learn is that the legal department wasn't consulted. That's what you learn.
I found a report of one of these at a tech sales conference in 2023. Someone sprained a wrist catching a regional vice president. The regional vice president was fine. The catcher went to urgent care.
Did it close the deal?
The deal wasn't discussed in the emergency room, no.
Number 2, the rent-a-mourner.
Oh, this one's wonderful. Companies hire actors to play mourners at a fake funeral, not for a project this time, but for the attendee themselves.
Explain.
You lie in a coffin. It's a closed coffin. You're not visible. And professional actors gather around and deliver eulogies about you based on a brief questionnaire you filled out beforehand.
So you're alive, in a box, listening to strangers say nice things about you.
That's the experience. It's marketed as a life prioritization exercise. The idea is that hearing what people might say about you clarifies what matters.
But the people saying it are being paid. They don't know you. They're working from a form you filled out in the lobby 10 minutes ago. He was a devoted father who enjoyed cycling and hoped to one day visit Patagonia.
And you're lying in a rental coffin that was probably used for the same exercise by 3 other conference attendees that day.
The coffin has a frequent flyer program.
The coffin is the most networked object at the conference.
Number 1. And I need everyone to understand that this is the top spot for a reason. The Goat Yoga Keynote.
I knew this would be number 1.
For listeners who haven't encountered this, a keynote speaker delivers a talk about leadership or innovation or whatever, while actual live goats wander around the stage and occasionally climb onto the speaker.
And sometimes onto attendees.
This has been done. multiple times. There are companies that specifically provide goats for corporate events.
The goats are wearing little diapers. That's a real detail. They put diapers on the goats so they don't disrupt the keynote with what goats naturally do.
So you're sitting in a conference hall, watching a PowerPoint about digital transformation, and a diapered goat is standing on the presenter's shoulders. And you're supposed to find this inspiring, rather than deeply confusing.
The stated rationale is that goats are playful and unpredictable, and this somehow models the agility required in modern business. The actual experience is that nobody remembers a single word of the keynote because a goat tried to eat the slide advancer.
I want to know about the moment the speaker realizes it's not working. That moment when a goat is chewing on their lavalier mic and they have to decide whether to acknowledge it or just power through.
The best ones acknowledge it. The worst ones try to incorporate it into the metaphor. And just like this goat, disruption doesn't ask permission before it climbs onto your strategic plan.
That's a real sentence someone has said into a microphone.
Almost certainly.
What's the through line here, across all 10?
I think it's the assumption that professionals are so starved for authentic connection that any gimmick will work if it's unusual enough. The logic is, people are bored, so let's add goats. People are disengaged, so let's make them fall off things. It's a complete failure to understand that what people actually want is content that respects their intelligence and time.
The more desperate the gimmick, the less confidence the organizer has in the actual program.
If your content is compelling, you don't need a cuddle corner. If your networking is well structured, you don't need a ball pit. The gimmicks are an admission of failure dressed as innovation.
It's the conference equivalent of a restaurant that has a 12-page menu. Nobody's confident about anything in the kitchen.
And the tragedy is that some of these probably started as genuine, well-intentioned ideas in small, consenting groups where they actually worked. The human knot with a team that's been together for 2 years? Fine. The funeral for a project your department actually lived through? Probably cathartic. But then the conference industry scales them, strips the context, and sells them as one-size-fits-all engagement solutions.
But scaling is what kills it. Intimacy doesn't scale. Vulnerability doesn't scale. You can't industrialize trust.
But the industry keeps trying because the alternative, just making the content better, is harder. It's easier to rent goats than to find a speaker who can hold a room for 45 minutes without props.
I'd push back slightly on one thing. I think some of these gimmicks work, but not for the reason organizers think. They work because they're so absurd that attendees bond over the shared absurdity. The Goat Yoga keynote doesn't teach you about agility. It gives you a story you'll tell for years. That has value.
That's fair. The shared trauma becomes the actual networking. You meet someone at the coffee break, and instead of, what do you do, it's, did you see the goat eat the slide advancer? That's a real connection.
The question is whether the connection is worth the registration fee. If I paid $2,000 and the main thing I remember is a diapered goat, I'm not sure I got my money's worth.
Unless the goat was the keynote speaker, in which case, honestly, I'd pay more.
A goat with actual insights about supply chain optimization. I'd attend that conference.
It was a pig.
Pardon?
Not goats. The first time this was tried at scale, it was a pig. A pot-bellied pig. South by Southwest, 2012. They brought it out during a panel about disruption, and it immediately urinated on the stage. Nobody had thought to put a diaper on it.
That's a significant detail.
The panel was about lean startup methodology. The pig was supposed to represent moving fast and breaking things. It broke the stage. They had to pause for 20 minutes while someone mopped.
And they still tried this again with goats?
People have short memories and long lists of things they'll rent to conferences. I know the man who supplied the pig. His name was Marcus. He ran a petting zoo in Austin. He got 300 calls the next week from event planners who'd seen the coverage and wanted the disruption pig.
So the failure spawned the industry.
Most industries start that way. Someone messes up in public, and a dozen people think I could monetize that.
Do you still talk to Marcus?
He retired. Moved to Florida. The pig lived another 8 years and died of natural causes. Marcus put pioneer of experiential corporate engagement on the pig's obituary. The pig was more successful than most of the startups at that conference.
There's something almost profound about that. The pig achieved what the panelists were advising people to do. It pivoted from petting zoo animal to corporate thought leader.
It didn't pivot. It walked onto a stage and urinated. The pivot was everyone else's story about it.
That's the cleanest definition of conference culture I've ever heard. The pig just did what pigs do. The narrative was a group project.
Most of these gimmicks are that. Someone did something ordinary in an unexpected place, and a consultant turned it into a framework. I've still got the brochure from the company that spun out of that panel. Poor Seam Principles for Disruptive Leadership. 30 pages. Spiral bound.
You kept the brochure.
It's in a box.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier, Herman, about how these gimmicks are an admission of failure. I think that's right, but I also think there's a second thing happening. These stunts aren't for the attendees. They're for the organizers' marketing.
Say it more.
Nobody puts, "We had excellent content and well-structured networking sessions," in a promotional video. But we had a ball pit and a professional roaster and a goat in a diaper? That gets shared. The gimmick is content for next year's registration page.
So the attendees are props in the marketing for the next conference.
The experience isn't designed for the people in the room. It's designed for the people who'll see the highlight reel.
That's why the pig worked. The pig wasn't for the audience. The pig was for the coverage.
And the coverage worked. We're talking about it 14 years later.
14 years, and nobody remembers what the panel was actually about.
Do you?
Something about failing fast. They failed to keep the pig continent. That's what I remember.
The misconception here, and I think this is what Daniel's prompt is really pointing at, is that these gimmicks are random. That some event planner just has wacky ideas and throws them at the wall. But they're not random. They're systematic. Each one is an attempt to manufacture a moment that would otherwise happen organically if the conference were actually good.
Manufactured spontaneity. The most expensive kind.
And the least effective. Because people can tell, you can't fake the feeling of a genuine connection or a real insight. You can only create conditions where those things might happen. And those conditions are usually good content, enough time, and not being asked to hold hands with strangers.
The best conference I ever attended had none of this. No icebreakers, no gimmicks, no trust falls. Just people who knew things, talking about those things, with breaks long enough to actually talk to each other.
Radical concept.
Unscalable, apparently.
The breaks are the part everyone gets wrong. I worked a conference in Chicago in the 90s. Medical equipment, very dry, and the organizer cut the breaks to 15 minutes because he wanted to pack in more sessions. Attendees revolted. Not formally. They just stopped going to sessions and stood in the hallway talking. By day two, the hallway was the conference.
The hallway track. It's the most valuable part of any conference, and it's the one thing organizers can't schedule or monetize.
They tried. The next year, same organizer, he put up designated networking zones with timers. You got 12 minutes per zone, then a bell rang, and you had to rotate. Like speed dating for radiologists.
How did that go?
The radiologists ignored the bells. Radiologists aren't known for compliance with arbitrary timers. The zones became regular hallways. The organizer put out a press release about his structured serendipity framework. I still have the press release.
Of course you do.
It's in the same box.
I think that's where we land. The weirdest conference gimmicks aren't the ones that fail spectacularly. The pig, the goat, the coffin. They're the ones that succeed at producing a story the organizer can sell, while producing nothing of value for the people who actually showed up.
And the metric that matters, would attendees come back, never gets measured against the gimmick. It gets measured against the whole package. So the organizer says, we had record attendance, and doesn't mention that half the attendees came because they heard about the goat, and the other half left early.
Daniel, if you're at a conference right now, and someone's handing out diapers for livestock, you have our permission to leave.
The prompt asked for 10. We delivered 10. I'd add an 11th as a bonus. The conference that does none of this and still sells out. Those exist. They're just harder to find because their marketing doesn't feature a pig.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, and for the porcine history lesson we didn't know we needed.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've survived a conference gimmick we didn't cover, we want to hear about it. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Try not to fall off anything.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to us.
brush all my weird prompts where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.